Welcome, travelers. We're aware that your journey was difficult, but prepare to have your questions answered, for you have been granted an audience with the Masters of Modern.
And welcome back to Masters of Modern. I am your host, Alex Kessler, here with my co-host, Ben Bayman.
What's going on, everybody?
So, today is our Christmas episode. This is the last episode we're going to do until the new year and Christmases. So, we want to wish you all you guys a Merry Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, New Year's.
And a Happy New Year.
I said that.
I needed to add something, Alex.
No, I got all the holidays. You can have Groundhog's Day when that happens. I guess that's the next holiday. Oh, President's Day. There's all the presidents.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're important.
And the,
they, like, did stuff.
And the championship of my fantasy league.
Oh, right. Well, that's this weekend. The one you knocked me out of. Beyond that, 2014 was kind of a crazy year.
Yeah.
Some crazy stuff. Like, Wizards has basically flipped the entire game of Magic on its head by adding two blocks a year. PTQs are gone.
It's a lot of stuff, yeah.
Modern Masters 2 is coming out next year. I guess that's the next year thing.
We're sort of in the middle of like a golden age of this game right now, which is really pretty exciting. I mean, we're a podcast. We get to do a Magic the Gathering podcast.
Right.
That's pretty exciting. There seems to be constantly new content. They're continuing to pump more and more money into the game so you can continue to try to win more. There's more players. The game design is better and better.
Basically, every fall set has broken records consistently since the beginning of M10.
Yeah, it's just been a great 5 years, without a doubt. And we're hoping the next 5 years are even more awesome and huge and exciting. And I think we talked about this recently on an episode where Josh Lee Kwai was on the episode, but just the concept of a professional Magic player and what that is and getting there and how there is actually probably going to be a time in the next 5 years where you can make a very sizable living as a Magic player.
Right.
Just like any game, we're sort of the front end of this idea of professional gamers.
The moment one of these guys realizes, oh, I have enough people following me that I can get a legitimate sponsor just to like strap logos on my t-shirt, not like a card store, but like Coke is the moment, or Mountain Dew probably first, or Red Bull, but is the moment that people will start making real money being a Magic professional player.
And I don't think we're very far from it.
I don't think so. I agree. So today, we're going to be talking about 8th and 9th edition. This is actually the first of a series we're going to do about eventually going through each of the sets in Modern, the Modern format, and breaking down like key cards and what they've added to the format. So for like newer players, they can kind of be like, oh, 8th and 9th edition. Like, I know for me, when I first started playing Modern, I, like, didn't know any cards that were... people would play something like Boil or Choke against me. I'd be like, that card's legal in this format? And they'd be like, yeah, it's an 8th edition. You'd be like, oh.
Yeah, definitely.
I forgot that set existed.
So this will be, like, a fun way. What we're going to do is, I think with the core sets, we'll probably pair them in sets of twos. So in this sense, we'll do 8th and 9th edition, then, 10th edition, and I guess M10 would be the next two core sets.
Yeah,
but
the 10s.
Yeah, and then as far as when we do expansion sets and large sets, we'll do probably blocks, so sets of three. But this will also be kind of a fun history lesson because this will be done chronologically. So this dates back to, I think, 8th and 9th edition are probably like
2003. So the cool thing about 8th edition is it's actually the 10th anniversary of Magic. So like the Modern format cuts, they literally just sliced off the first 10 years and started from that point on. So it's like the end of the not modern era, but the past era.
And since Modern has been created, we've now gone from Modern including, 8 years of Magic to now more than half.
Yeah,
and
there's 12, yeah.
Yeah, and there's been a theory for a long time that people have had that essentially when the complaints between Legacy and Modern were running rampant as Modern was being announced and promoted, that in, 4, 5, 6 years, Modern would basically include such a larger statistical margin of the cards that have ever been printed and reprinted at that point that Legacy would become essentially irrelevant.
Right.
Because Modern will just become Legacy minus the most broken cards, which I think is what they had in mind the whole time. And
I understand why they picked that moment. It's epic for Magic. They changed the card border. It's the 10th anniversary. Mirrodin was the first block out of that gate, which is like a famous, record breaking, like the first set to break records and then lose a bunch of players. And, like, that's kind of the era they picked. So, like, let's kind of get into some of the key cards from 8th edition.
So, yeah, we can definitely, first of all, just pinpoint the fact that as evolved as it seemed like they thought they were in 2003 with card design and set design, it's night and day.
Well, yeah. I mean, 8th edition is also, like, classically considered underpowered versus other sets that have ever come out.
Well, it's a ridiculous set for the most part. Right. There's a lot of cards in 8th edition that are just like, why would you decide to reprint that?
Well, there are three cycles of like color hosers. It has like all of the circle of protections, and it has the like when something of that spell is played, you can pay one to gain a life. It has like multiple reasons that just hate on colors. It has choke and boil and like...
It has a lot of things that play on color. It reprints, we'll get to it. But it's definitely a very strange set. The card design and the card choices in the set are very weird.
Right.
And it's not as good as 9th edition, so it'll be probably a little short for us.
Right. So I think, you know, we're going to go alphabetically by mana cost. So let's start with the land, and that's City of Brass. It's the main card that kind of is added to the format. It's been kind of outclassed recently, so Mana Confluence came out and is just a better version of it, purely off the fact that it can't be used against you by an opponent to kill you.
Right. Yeah. But it's functionally the same card.
Yeah, functionally the same card.
And so it is nice that there's redundancy now with Mana Confluence. If you're trying to make a deck that's just super, super greedy,
right.
And doesn't care about
its
life total.
20 cards in Modern that all tap for any color. So you can literally just have a mana base starting out. It's painful, but that taps for.
What?
Mana Confluence, City of Brass, Forbidden Orchard, Gemstone, Cavern.
Gemstone Mine.
Mine. And. That's 4, so that's 16.
Reflecting Pool?
Yeah, I guess Reflecting Pool.
Yeah, that'd be
would be my cheat way out of this.
Exciting. So yeah, City of Brass, good card. It's super great for greedy brewers who want to use all the good cards. The next card on this list is the best card in 8th edition.
Yeah, I think this is by far the best card in 8th edition. There's some cards that we're going to mention that are also coming up in later core sets, but Birds of Paradise.
Yeah, and Birds has been printed in like almost every core set ever.
Recently, there's been a few that it hasn't been, but I think there's a total of like 3 that it's never been printed in.
I mean, it was also reprinted in Ravnica, the original Ravnica.
Yep.
I feel like maybe another expansion. But, I mean, it's definitely one of those cards. It's nice to see cards like Birds of Paradise because in a point in the game where there's been so many reprints, functional reprints of cards with different names, and the redundancy on certain cards has just been done to death,
mm-hmm.
something like... a classic card like Lenar Elf, which was in every single set,
right.
becomes Elvish Mystic, and the sort of the classic.
Why they did that, you know, right?
So it would fit the.
No, because it's plural.
Oh.
It was purely the fact that they're starting to like move away from plural creatures.
Okay.
And so like Llanowar Elves, and it's just like one dude on the card.
Right.
Doesn't make sense.
No, it makes sense, but I just mean in the sense that the historian, the classic Magic fan, you're like, why do I not just get my like Llanowar Elves? It's nice to see that Birds of Paradise is still the only Birds of Paradise.
Oh, yeah.
They've never made another card that's the same card.
I would not be surprised that in our future, like, a 1-1 that doesn't fly for one gets printed that the same ability, and it'll just be worse.
Yeah. It's...
I mean, not purely worse, but, yeah. I mean, it's definitely... I mean, this card has allowed the modern... You know, many decks just play better, and they can exist. Like,
right.
Pod exists because there are cards like this in the format.
And it's one of those classic things in deck design where the concept of a 1-drop accelerant and a 3-drop on turn 2 is
very strong.
Yeah, it always has been. If you play, you play like turn 2 Vendilion Click, and the fact that you can play any color, so you start with green, and by turn 2 you can like go like double blue with your card.
Right.
It's definitely very strong. I think Birds will always have a special place in deck design for that reason.
So the next one on my list, I think this is now going in descending power level order. And this is seen, originally didn't see a lot of play in the format, probably because I think people forgot that 8th edition was a format and it existed in the format. But people realized, oh, this is one of the best sideboard cards that you can play, Choke.
Yeah, Choke is pretty backbreaking. It's actually a card that sees more legacy play. You see people bring this in out of the sideboard in some decks. Maverick will play this card. But it's...
Not a deck anymore, but...
yeah. But it's definitely...
I mean, in Modern, it's the card that you bring in against Delver. It, like, shuts their game plan down, or half their game plan down. It's very, like, in the format where almost all the lands, someone's playing with either basic islands or double, you know, like, island mountains. It's very strong. And it gives, a green deck another level to kind of fight these blue decks. So Choke is an enchantment that...
costs 1 green and 2 colorless. And it states, islands don't untap during their controller's untap step. So it affects both... basic islands, as well as dual lands that have island as a subtype.
Right. Take that, blue players, and all your blue shenanigans.
It's really good. It's definitely one of the cards, just like Blood Moon. It comes down against you. You're not prepared for it, and you just sink in your chair, because you probably lost.
Right.
Really, really frustrating. The next card on the list is another card I think that would be characterized as probably a sideboard card, but it's...
I think it's underplayed. I think it's seen play in Tezzerator decks that are like, I want to play with artifacts and have some type of a toolbox situation. Which like an Alex Kessler deck that hasn't ever won anything.
Two things I'd like to do. I want a soundboard that has you saying the word toolbox.
Okay.
Because anytime you ever say something that annoys me, I'm just going to hit the button, toolbox, toolbox, toolbox. and the second thing I want to do is we talk about Tezzerator decks so much on this cast, yet we've never teched one. So I think we need to brew a Tezzerator deck.
Okay, that will be the next, well, not the next brew. A future brew will be Tezzerator.
I mean, I think our Architect deck kind of almost was.
It's close. That's why I want to, not next. That's why, let's wait a little bit for the another artifact brew house to come down the field.
Sounds good.
I don't know what, too many metaphors. All right, so Ensnaring Bridge is the card. It's a 3-cost artifact, and creatures with power greater than the number of cards in your hand can't attack. This is a modern, or a legacy staple. I mean, there are multiple decks that just play this card. I think one of the things that's hurting it in modern is a lack of a top effect. So, or Jace, where, like, these are things that let you have a hand without having a hand.
Right.
And so, you know, there is no way really right now in modern to be able to mitigate the fact that you have to play a control deck with no cards in hand, which is just where you don't want to be in a control deck.
What you see, so Ensnaring Bridge is an artifact for 3 mana.
I read it already.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Gotcha. Toolbox. No. Ensnaring Bridge is basically a card that classically, the most common use you would see for this is that when somebody shows, like, use Show and Tell and Emrakul comes in, your Ensnaring Bridge comes in.
Right.
And now they can't attack you. And it's one of these cards that definitely does not see enough play. It's good against way more decks than you'd think, and it's super frustrating if it comes down, because unless you have main deck Artifact Hate or a Bounce spell, they're basically calling the shots from that
point
forward. And it's colorless, so just like any one of these high-impact sideboard cards that's an artifact, it can be played in any deck, which makes it even more powerful and annoying.
Right. To be totally honest, I think it actually is probably a great card for Twin to start playing, now reading it, because you can mitigate your card size hand. You can make it so they can't attack you, and then you can combo off whenever you want.
And your highest power level on Twin creatures, too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, your like protection is, you can have like one or two spells, and you're just fine. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So then moving on.
The only one I really have is Seismic Assault. I mean, like, the interesting thing is, like, I literally only have 5 cards from the set that I've seen play in some deck in Modern. There's a bunch of, like, semi-cuter cards that, like, maybe should see play. But Seismic Assault is a triple red enchantment that lets you discard a land to do 2 damage to target creature or player. It's the classic combo piece with Life from the Loam for, you know, aggro loam decks, where it's, like, you're cycling Loam to, like, just continually do 6 damage every turn, and eventually you value them out.
In the early days of this format, when people were essentially taking old extended decks and legacy decks and trying to port them over to modern in an attempt to just surprise people, Bronson Magnon won, I believe, GP Lincoln was the first one.
Okay.
It was the first modern Grand Prix, and he was playing a version of Aggro Loam that essentially all it does is, like, it switches out, like, Mox Diamonds for something else because you can't play Mox Diamond.
Right.
And, he won with this card, and I don't think it's won a GP since. I wouldn't be surprised if it's top 8ed 1 or 2 here and there. But it's, you know, it's a little clunky of a strategy for the
format.
It's
like a fringe tier 3 deck.
Yeah.
Where, like, there are players that have it and are probably played a lot, but not, they're either not good enough to have done well with it, or the deck isn't good enough to kind of do it.
Yeah. So it's the toughest thing about Seismic Assault. It's a very tempting card for any brewer, because the idea of getting to discard extra land cards for an effect is great. It's triple red. It's just that's the reason it's such a hard card to use, is if you're going to try to build around this, you have to be able to support triple red, and that's hard to do.
Blood Moon.
Yeah. So what I'd like to do really quickly is rattle off maybe 2-3 cards each that are in 8th edition that don't see enough play, or not even necessarily that we think are super good, more just that are super interesting.
So mine has seen play marginally in formats in history's past. It just is maybe a little too slow. But as we saw with Glittering Wish, this speed of spell can eventually become strong if the right card is printed. And that is Merchant Scroll.
Yeah, actually a very good card, and a card that I have found myself using in many more casual formats.
Right. So Merchant Scroll, what it lets you do is search for a target.
Blue instant. It's 1 blue, 1 colorless, a sorcery. Originally printed in Homelands, actually.
This card, you know, you can search for counter spells. That's kind of classically, it's been used to, like, look for gifts, and gifts deck is kind of where it kind of sees play. It's an interesting card. It'll probably see play at some point. It's one of the cards to keep your eye on, because eventually there'll be a blue instant that's good enough with it.
Yeah.
Well, a combo deck will be created. Like, the two things are either a combo deck is created that this finds it on turn two, and then turn three you're winning with it, or like you're able to go with it, and that just doesn't exist right now.
Yeah, might in the future. Next one on my list, on this list, Intruder Alarm would probably be something that comes to mind for me. One blue, two colorless enchantment. Creatures don't untap during their controller's untap steps.
So this has seen some amount of play.
Hang on. And whenever a creature comes into play, untap all creatures. So it has this both sides of the effect where if you have things that...
So this goes with Kiki. This is like the non-creature type of for a Kiki-Jiki combo win. Like I've seen this in formats where like creature hate is so heavy, they play like a one of this because you can go infinite with any creature.
Right.
Which kind of allows Kiki-Jiki to power it out. The issue becomes a three-piece combo instead of a two-piece combo.
Sure.
Though, you know, you gain some marginal value where this is just, you can play this early, it just sits there, and it can also kind of lock them out because if they don't have a creature to play, they can't attack you.
Et cetera, you know.
It definitely has combo potential. It has a similar effect to what Jeskai Ascendancy has, if you really think about it.
Totally.
Instead of you playing as a sorcery, it's creatures coming into play, so there is a difference, but it's definitely something to keep an eye on.
Anyway, let's move on to 9th edition.
Yeah, 9th edition.
So 9th edition is a much better set.
Like, we're going to start reading cards, and all of these are format staples to some extent versus the one where it's like all loose cards other than Birds of Paradise. First on my list, let's start with the lands. A Darker Wastes. Or add a card. Sorry.
Let's just be clear really quickly. Alex is talking about the Pain lands that are actually in Standard again now.
Well, the enemy ones are. So there are the allies and enemies are both in 9th edition. So these are the lands that you can tap for colorless or you can tap for one of two colors. And they do one damage to you.
And for those of you that don't know, the Pain lands are actually one of the earliest incarnations of Wizards trying to fix the original dual lands and make them less powerful.
They've been around forever. These are like been staples of kind of like what Standard was with the new check lands. When it comes to play, it comes into play untapped if you have a plains or an island.
These were the
first versions where they like we were going to reprint these 1,000 times. They're just in every core set.
The core set duels were reprinted, I think, for like a good like 4 or 5 years in core sets. The original cycle was from Ice Age actually in like 1996, and then they created those the friend colored ones we're talking about here, and then the enemy color ones that are in Standard now were introduced in Apocalypse, which should have been like 2000 probably or like right around there.
Yeah.
So anyway, that cycle of lands, they're not particularly good. They're fine. There's better lands out there.
The one that's seen the most play is the blue-red one.
Yeah.
Because it sees significant modern play.
In Storm and in...
Yeah, because where they are going to see the most play are the decks that are purely two-color.
And they just don't care about life loss.
And they don't care about life loss. So like, yeah, exactly. It sees play in Storm. Like the blue-red kind of sees the most play because there's the most like blue-red decks that are like looking for this kind of effect. Next on the lands list, Urza's Mine and the Urza-Tron. So
this is relevant.
This is very relevant. This is like the deck that these are the lands that make the deck Tron possible. If they weren't in 9th edition, they wouldn't be in the format.
Yeah, definitely. I think as a brewer, when you go through the entire card list in Modern, there's a whole history, and you look at every card that's ever been printed, there's some stuff where you look and you're like, oh, that's obvious. Everybody remembers that. That's a recent set. And then there's a few cards that exist in weird sets that you're like, maybe they didn't realize when they made. And I think the Tron lands. Oh, it's like they only show up in this one set. It was a core set. It was a weird reprint. But they add a lot to the format.
Oh, yeah. Well, so, you know, originally the format had one major ramp deck, and that was using the Cloud Posts. And when they banned that deck or the format, kind of Urza, the Urza-Tron replaced that as the effect. And they're very strong. I mean, these are the lands that let you get Karn turn three.
Yeah.
Which is like, there are a lot of decks that is just their bad matchup.
These are also lands that allow you to get Memnarch on turn three. Moving on.
I mean, really, it's the fact that you get pump out Giant Eldrazi really early. You get Karn, Wormcoil Engine. These are great cards.
Very strong.
It's very obvious why this is powerful. And the deck can do it by turn three, which is what's really important.
Yes.
For lands, it's kind of done. But the next is the only other zero cost permanent, and that's Ornithopter. Favorite card of the podcast.
Yet another intrinsically powerful card.
Right. Well, they don't know what you're talking about yet, Ben. A zero is zero mana for a 0/2 flyer. It's a classic card. Been around forever.
Yep. It's one of these cards that when you're like a little kid, you think is so awesome because it's like it's a zero casting cost
flying
creature.
This card
has
won many a GP.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's good in one deck. I used to love Ornithopter. I still have a set. My older brother gave me a ton of his Magic cards when I was a little kid in 1995 when he taught me how to play. And he gave them to me in this like plastic grocery bag. And they were like pretty beat up. But I had three original Antiquities Ornithopters, and I still have them.
Okay.
And they're all like battered and beaten and like kind of white. Yeah. But they're just awesome, and I just love them.
Oh,
so.
Yeah. This is like one of the first favorite cards that come out there. So now on to spells. I have two one drops. Do you have any?
As far as actually good cards, I mean, I think Sleight of Hand comes to mind for me.
Yeah, so Sleight of Hand is one blue. You can look at the top two cards of your library and put one of them in your hand and one on the bottom of the library.
It's a sorcery. This and Serum Visions replaced Ponder and Preordain when they were banned.
It's like, it wouldn't see play if one of the good versions of it were legal, but they're not, so this is probably the second best.
It's the fourth best. It's the fourth best of these effects that could be played, and then they banned the best two, so this is the second best now.
And it's like maybe the sixth best ever, because like Brainstorm and other better ones in Legacy even exist. It does what it does. The deck, the format has, you know, needs and will always need kind of some type of cantrip card selection. And this is, like Serum Visions, this is not necessarily the hero we want, but it is the hero we deserve.
Sure.
It's the Batmans of the modern world.
I think the other one drop...
Soul Warden is the other one I have. We talked about it last week. Soul Sisters, it's, you know...
That's interesting. I didn't include it in my list, but I mean, it makes sense why you would.
Right. These are cards that see play in modern. These are cards to be aware of that were introduced from these sets. It's a one-drop 1/1 that gains your life when creatures come into play. It's just playing exactly one deck, but in that one deck that, you know, just hopped into GP and is around, it's something to be wary of.
If we're going to talk about one-drops from that deck specifically, I do want to mention Weathered Wayfarer.
Yes, that is also in the deck.
And Weathered Wayfarer is, I think I've talked about this on the pod before, but it's one of these cards that is, like land type is such an interesting thing in Magic design. They make so few cards that can actually search for any land as opposed to just basic lands.
Right.
So Weathered Wayfarer is a 1/1 Humid Nomad Cleric for 1 white that has a 1 white and tap. Search your library for a land card. Reveal it and put it into your hand, then shuffle your library. Play this ability only if an opponent controls more lands than you. So it's one of these cards that sometimes you have to sandbag a land to be able to use the ability effectively. But if you're playing a great number of Ghost Quarter effects, Horizon Canopy, kind of spell lands to some degree,
right,
it's very valuable.
Well, this is, I mean, toolbox.
Yeah.
When it comes down to, this is one of the cards that, like, I have played this more in casual formats than regular formats, but it is a staple of the Soul Warden deck. And theoretically, if a good enough land gets played, these are the cards to look out for, because being able to 2-4 any land is really important.
At instant speed
as well. At instant speed, right. Yeah. So
it's,
like,
it's definitely really, really, really good.
It's kind of like Stoneforge Mystic, Birthing Pod. Basically, what it comes down to is Wizards has to be wary of printing powerful lands, powerful cards of this type, partly because as soon as the right one is printed, these cards become too powerful. Like Stoneforge Mystic was not a playable standard card for the entire time it was in standard until the black-green sword was printed, when they were like, oh, wait, this is amazing.
Sub question for you guys as listeners. I want a Twitter response on this. On a scale of 1 to 10, how much better is Stoneforge Mystic than Weathered Wayfarer? Moving on.
All right. So next is probably, for me, the most powerful card coming out of 9th edition, and that's Mana Leak.
Yeah, Mana Leak. So Mana Leak's the best 2-mana counterspell, not actually counterspell or mana drain, that's ever been printed.
I would argue that, you know, in modern, Remand is just better. Strictly better.
Debatable. I mean, the inevitable...
Overall time, Mana Leak is stronger, because in older formats or different formats than modern, the ability, like... getting past 3 mana is actually not going to happen very often. But in modern, the Remand ability of, you know, drawing you another spell and just delaying is more important than, like, Mana Leak, especially since blue is most often paired with white, and the best removal spell for them, like, is actively bad with Mana Leak.
Interesting. I prefer Mana Leak. Though Remand is, like, in terms of favorites, I prefer Remand. Like, I like the card more. I would prefer to have Mana Leak in my hand in like, a deck that I felt like my turn 1 or my turn 2 was, like, a very strong definitive play.
Fair enough. I mean, the other side for me is Mana Leak is worse with Snapcaster Mage.
True.
Because Snapcaster Mage is all about long game and later game gaining value, and Mana Leak gets worse every turn.
So, later on, Remand just is more interesting, draws you a card. I think that's totally fair, but as far as the cards that are in this set, Mana Leak is definitely the strongest one.
Right.
Next on my list would be Pyroclasm.
Yep, same. This is the premier 2-drop board wipe. You know, we'll talk about it later when we talk about Tron.
1 red, 1 colorless sorcery. Pyroclasm deals 2 damage to every creature.
Right. And this is seeing a lot of play now because of
Delver decks.
It's like a great against Delver. It's great in Delver. It's kind of like the main board wipe now of the format, now that the format has sped up so much.
Yeah, it's a very strong card. The nice thing about Pyroclasm is it's not color restrictive. You can play it in, like, most decks. It only costs 1 red. It's cheap. It's just very versatile.
Right. So the next card to drop, this is probably lower on the end of the power level, but it sees play in one specific deck, and that deck it powers that deck to a higher power level.
Are you talking about Summer Bloom?
Summer Bloom.
Yeah.
So Summer Bloom is 1 green, 1 colorless. You can put up to 3 additional lands into play this turn. So in the deck that in Amulet of Vigor decks, this card is extremely powerful because you play Amulet of Vigor. If you have multiples in play, you can start playing the bounce lands, and you just gain so much mana so quickly but with this card and those cards and those effects together.
It's definitely one of those wonky fringe decks that came out of nowhere on Magic Online one time, and everybody went crazy for it.
It's breakout turn. Like, it showed up on Magic Online, and then it got multiple on-camera viewings during Pro Tour Born of the Gods.
Because, yeah, but it's one of these decks that the surprise factor is what makes it good. It's so explosive. Can it get a turn two Primeval Titan?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure it can get a turn two. The biggest issue with the deck is it's actually probably the most difficult deck to play in Modern. We say that Birthing Pod is, and Birthing Pod is of the decks that are tier one, of the tier decks, like all of them, this is one of the most difficult decks. It's such a glass cannon to actually
this pull
off.
This is tier three, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, but it is a good card. It's super unique. Again, there's a parallel effect to this card that they printed, and it's interesting. We could talk about it in the honorable mentions, but Gift of Estates is another card that is also in the set. One white, one colorless. If an opponent has more lands than you, search your library for up to three planes cards, reveal them, and put them into your hand. Again, planes cards, so you can get multicolored planes.
That's like the slightly more expensive Tithe, which is on the reserved list. One of my favorite cards from back in the day.
Yeah.
I one day maybe will tweet a picture of it. I have a custom art one that has like the two suns from Star Wars with Luke like on the Dune side.
You're such a nerd.
I'm a giant nerd.
But yeah, anyway, obviously Summer Gloom is a much better card. But it's just interesting to see that the kind of parallel printings. And then the Weathered Wayfarer is one. It has the same kind of effect.
They
have more lands
than
you.
Right, like a weird additional land
deck
they tried building in the 9th edition.
So the first three drop on the list is Blood Moon,
which is the second best red card ever in the format.
Yeah, I mean, Blood Moon's so good.
So good.
Yeah, and again, them reprinting this in a core set is further proof that they had no idea what they were doing at the time they were printing these sets.
Early core sets, I think. And this is true. The like not 8th and 9th and 10th and all those editions and all the editions before that were much less about draftability and much less about like they're much more about like, okay, we know what this standard's going to be like. We want to include some of these cards in it that give access to them.
Yeah, Blood Moon, we've talked before. It's super not fun to play against. It's really, really annoying if you don't see it coming. I have been on both sides of it where I still stand on my mountain and I will say I think that printing cards like this is not good for Magic. I think it makes the game not fun because if you build a deck and you're really excited about it and this card comes down, you often will have no way to play the game anymore. You're not supposed to be able to win Magic games off of 3-mana enchantments with nothing else. And that, I think, is bad for the game. But if you play it and that happens and you're on the side that play the Blood Moon, you're a genius and you love it. Who doesn't like winning Magic games?
Right. Okay, so now this is, do you have any more 3-drops?
Nothing else that's...
So I have the 4-drop, and then I'm done.
It should be noted, this could be an honorable mention, but it's not weird enough. Phyrexian Arena is 2 black and 1 colorless enchantment. At the beginning of your upkeep, you draw a card and lose 1 life. It's the slightly worse version of Dark Confidant.
Right, like Dark Confidant is a creature and attacks, which is really relevant. It is a 2-drop, which is more relevant, and you can kill it yourself if you need to. It gains you less, it hurts you less by playing Phyrexian Arena, and I think that if there was a more controlly deck that didn't want, wanted to not play that many creatures that, turning off opponent's removal, Phyrexian Arena might be a better option for like an Esper kind of control deck. It doesn't exist right now, doesn't see a lot of play. Currently, Bob's not even very good in the format.
Yeah. I mean, it's just one of these cards that if you look at it, you say, look, drawing an extra card per turn for 1 life at 3 mana is really good. Right. So I'm maybe not in Modern now.
It saw a ton of play in Standard when it was in Standard. Sees a ton of Commander play, just not really a Modern staple right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
So my only 4-drop, and then we can get into my honorable mentions unless you have other cards, is probably the important Wrath board wipe of the format, known as Wrath of God.
Yeah.
What it comes down to is you have 2 choices. You have 3 choices of wraths in the format, really, and it's Wrath of God, Damnation, or Supreme Verdict.
Yeah.
And it comes down to what decks are important to stop out. Right now,
did you say Damnation?
I did.
Okay.
Yeah. Wrath of God is the white one, the mono white one. You know, there's technically Day of Judgment, and if you want more of the effect, then you can play Day of Judgment. But when it comes down to the ability that, it says destroy all creatures for 4 mana, and they can't be regenerated, and they can't be regenerated is so important. And the reason you choose this over something like Supreme Verdict, because being able to kill stuff like Thrun is what's very, very, very relevant.
Yeah, Wrath of God's the original Wrath. I mean, that's why those effects are titled that. And it's interesting. They will reprint Wrath of God again someday when not being able to regenerate is important.
Well, so fun fact, they actually only recently have decided that Wrath of God could be reprinted. They stopped printing it for a while, and the reason Damnation came out is because they didn't like the connotation of God, because gods weren't in magic.
Uh-huh.
But the reason it was printed just recently in From the Vault Annihilation, and it was the last card put in the From the Vault, was because of the gods in Theros.
Right.
And because now there are gods in magic, Wrath of God makes sense. Before, there was no god, so it was like a weird religious reference that came from an era where there were also Shakespeare quotes and flavor text.
Yeah, definitely. It's so cool that magic has been around for 21 years now, yeah, and that there is legitimately so much subtext and history. It's really the subculture of this game and the history of this game. It's an interesting just... I mean, I think there probably should be a book written about the history at this point. Like a great book.
Well, that's kind of what, like, if you look at, listen to another podcast, Drive to Work by Mark Rosewater. He does a lot of episodes purely just on history stuff.
Yeah.
Like the Pro Tour in 1998. And just like, his plan is to kind of make this pod, his podcast, as a history of magic.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun. I love that. I love that side of it. The only other four drop for me that is interesting is Polymorph. And the reason Polymorph is interesting is it's one of these cards that if you build your deck correctly,
chemical on the play.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't take much. You know, this won a tournament, at least a Grand Prix, possibly a Pro Tour. Didn't this win a standard Pro Tour? Didn't Saito
I think it at least top eighted a Pro Tour. I don't know if it won. It's possible that it won. I don't know for sure.
Might have just been a Grand Prix, but yeah, it's Polymorph is really good. Destroy target creature for 1 blue and 3 colorless. It's a sorcery. Creature can't be regenerated. Its controller reveals cards from the top of his or her library until he or she reveals a creature card. That player puts the card into play and shuffles his or her library revealed this way. Blah, blah, blah. Anyway.
It lets you take a creature that you have to make a creature that isn't like a creature type card, and then you can cheat Emrakul into play.
Yeah, essentially it would work like you would play a card like Colony Garden or something that is a land that gives you a creature.
The main way, and Travis Wu is actually posting on Channel Fireball this week a list. He posted a list earlier this week, and we'll be posting a video maybe today. And basically, you use Dryad Arbor. That's the main, right now, the best card probably in the format to kind of put this, get Emrakul out there. It's you use your lands that you're automatically playing anyways, and you just get a big 15-15 in the play for free.
Yeah, it's fine. It's pretty easily disruptible. It, generally speaking, will make the card level, the power level of your deck really, really low to try to make the strategy work. There's also not another 4-drop that does it. There's a bigger version of it.
There's a 5-drop that lets you cheat things in the play, but exiles it at the end of turn.
Yeah,
and then there's...
it's just a little slow. Yep. That's all. But it is blue, and it's a blue combo card, and blue combo cards are always good because you can play lots of counter spells.
Yep.
Honorable mentions. Let's get to it.
All right. So my first honorable mention is going to be Battle of Wits.
Oh, okay.
So Battle of Wits, you know, has won multiple like tournaments. Never, I think, in Modern. But basically what it is it's a 4-drop enchantment, 5-drop enchantment that if you, during your upkeep, you have this in play and you have more than 200 cards in your deck, you win the game.
So this, it's interesting that nobody's actually won with this card. It is super interesting.
I mean, when it was in Standard, it won a tournament or two, or at least top 8 at a tournament or two. When it was first printed, it did very well in Standard. It's a card that... it's a weird combo piece that just will win, but you have to play with a giant deck that's, like, giant.
And because it's giant, you're going to constantly be tutoring, and shuffling a 200-card deck at a tournament is horrible.
Yeah, maybe it just, like, goes the time every time. You just can't not draw.
I can't even imagine trying to play this and not just knocking my deck over. It sounds absolutely awful.
Right.
But this card has the interesting connotation that as you print more magic cards and redundancy becomes just like the better, higher and higher and higher, this card will have a better and better chance of winning a tournament because the more redundant effects that make it good.
My favorite one I've seen ever is the there's the 1-drop black creature that you can have as many as you want in the deck.
Oh, yeah.
And you can sack 6 of them, I think, to put a demon in the play.
Yeah.
So... there's a demon that you can tutor for any card. So you just have your entire deck is these 1-drops. You have a couple of those demons, swamps, and you just tutor battle of swamps and islands, and you just tutor out the Battle of Wits with the demon and play it on turn 5.
It's really good.
It's really easy to aid out. Like, Pyroclasm just wrecks the deck all by itself, but like, it's so far the most consistent way I've seen of someone trying to win with Battle of Wits.
Yeah, that's interesting.
If not the cutest. It's definitely loose.
That sounds awesome as far as I'm concerned. Yeah, I think as far as honorable mentions go, if Wayfarer has been mentioned... one card that I really liked and I thought was really interesting was Guerrilla Tactics. This is not a card that I've really seen a lot of people play, but it's 1 red, 1 colorless for an instant. Guerrilla Tactics deals 2 damage to target creature or player. However, when a spell or ability an opponent controls causes you to discard Guerrilla Tactics, it deals 4 damage to target creature or player. The reason this is relevant to me is it's an instant burn spell that if Liliana makes you discard it, single-handedly takes out Liliana's loyalty at 4.
Right. And it's like an anti-Liliana hate that's kind of like Obstinate Baeloth, but it's more versatile as a removal spell than a threat.
Yeah, exactly. And even if they make you sack a creature, it still kills Liliana. So right. Either of the two abilities on that card, it's going to get rid of. And it's not the worst thing in the world to just have in your hand. It's right. A burn spell. Yeah. So.
My next one, it's seen actually a ton of Legacy play, a ton of Modern play. It's just, it's doesn't see that much right now. Curd Ape.
Yeah, it's just...
Classic card. I mean, it's a 2... What it is for one mountain, it's a 1-1, but if you have a forest, it's a 1-2, or it's a 2-3.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, one drop, two X anythings are very good. It's basically mini Wild Nacatl.
Yeah.
It sees some play in some, like, the hyper-aggressive Zoodex play it, but even Zoodex aren't seeing that much play right now.
Yeah, when they banned Nacatl, this was in Zoodex. Wildfire would be the next one for me. 2 red, 4 colorless sorcery. Each player sacrifices 4 lands. Wildfire deals 4 damage to each creature. This has been a staple in standard decks when it's been legal. It's a strategy card.
It's slightly, it's like 6 mana board wipes. It just doesn't do enough, I think, for the format. Oh, okay, well, so my pick is a Turbo Fog Classic, and it's Worship.
Yeah.
It basically makes you unkillable as long as you have creatures.
Yeah, Worship's another card that's interesting over the years. There's a lot of cool uses for Worship. It allows you to do some really degenerate things if you have an ability to keep a creature in play. Definitely Worship's great. So right. My last card is, this is a card that I want another like fan challenge. If you guys like hear this and you think this is as cool as I do, I talk about sometimes how sacrificing artifacts is such a hard thing to find cards that successfully do it, because there's not a lot of effects that, A, allow you to sacrifice permanents, and even more specifically, allow you to sacrifice artifacts. So Yawgmoth Demon, which is not a good card. It's a 6/6 flying first strike demon for 2 colorless and 4 black that says at the beginning of your upkeep, you may sacrifice an artifact. If you don't, tap it and it deals 2 damage to you. Now, it's not a good card. You're not playing it because you think that a 6/6 flying first strike for 6 is good.
Like I would argue that Ornithopter is better.
Would you argue? Toolbox. No, the reason I like this is because if you were going to play some sort of deck that maybe played like the Ichor Wellspring or the Mycosynth Wellspring, cards that you want to be able to play, get value, sack them, Esper Zoa maybe, something like that, you could sort of play. It'd be some kitschy, weird, like value artifact-y combo deck with Tezzeret. The 4-mana Tezzeret.
Right.
I'm going to probably brew it and insist we talk about it on this podcast.
Not going to happen.
And then we'll cut Yawgmoth Demon
from it. I'm not going to subject any of you people out there to this list. So that's 9th edition.
Ben has been dismissed from the podcast.
So the one cool fun fact about 9th edition is actually the last set with white borders ever printed.
Yeah, and they started making all the magic cards look good.
Yeah, they were just like, why are we doing this? There's no real purpose. We don't gain any value from white border. Let's just stop doing it. And we were all better for it, other than the 3 listeners out there that might like white border. And we apologize to you. White borders are not cool. I'm not apologizing.
Yeah, well, definitely, there's a lot of things they've just, like, sort of fixed over the years. So they've just, like, made magic better.
Right.
And, like, this is another one of those things where it's like, why are there ugly cards and good-looking magic cards?
I think my theory is it's a holdover from, like, how baseball cards or basketball cards maybe worked at one point, where it's like, oh, the good ones, the, like, original printings are all in, like, a specific kind of border. And then when they do reprints, they add, like, effect to it to make them different. And that's what this is. And it's just, like...
Yeah,
doesn't have that much value. It works for those maybe because it's all about collecting the originals. And
right.
But in Magic, it's the value is much more intrinsic to what it does, not where it came from.
Right.
And I mean, there is some collectability, but it's not nearly as important as like Tarmogoyf. No matter where you get it from, is expensive.
And there's a set symbol on every card.
Right.
You don't need to give it an ugly border just to differentiate. Like, there's a set symbol.
Right.
You can just make it.
Which didn't exist to start with, which may be why this was a thing. But yeah,
again, the first 10 years of this game, it was like the incubatory period. And now, really, especially the last 5, but over the last 10 years, they've sculpted it to the point that it's like, it's a fine-toothed comb now.
Right, right.
They're not going to make stupid mistakes in design and all that stuff. So anyway, that pretty much does it for 8th and 9th edition. Please...
If you're any cards that we didn't mention and you want to tweet at us, we are the MMcast on Twitter, and we would like to hear your favorite MMcast.
We'd love to hear your favorite modern cards that are in 8th and 9th edition.
Yes,
we didn't talk
not
about.
M9 or M8. Those aren't sets that existed.
For the record, if anybody gets on me about Yawgmoth Demon, I will respond immediately.
Challenge laid down. I need you guys to all make fun of how Ben likes that card.
I have puns. Twitter. I have puns prepared that I'm going to tweet back at you. I'm just going to insert your name and tweet you my pun. So I think we went on to tech a deck real quick before we.
Yeah. Today I kind of picked Red Green Tron, and the reason is because it's very Christmas themed.
You kind of picked it, or you picked it?
I picked it. Well, I picked it. We're playing Red Green Tron. I kind of picked it for the reason.
Oh.
Of it's Christmas time.
Because it's Christmassy.
It's red green, and there's like presents of gifts.
So Tron is a deck that we mentioned on the 8th and 9th edition review. So the Tron lands, Urza's Mine, Urza's Tower, and Urza's Factory, which were originally printed in Antiquities. They are lands that Urza's Tower is the sort of the best one.
If you have
one.
All three, they tap for 7 mana.
People call them Tron because it's like, you know, it's like Voltron, Urza
right.
Tron.
Yeah.
But basically, there are three lands that if you have all three of them, they tap for 2 mana, 2 mana, and 3 mana.
You don't have to go which one.
Yeah, but anyway, so the idea being that if you get all three of them on turn three, you can get 7 mana, which allows you to cast Karn Liberated or Wormcoil Engine. There's been several versions of this deck. There's a mono blue version, and there's the red green version.
There's technically also a blue white, but the most popular and probably the definitive two are red green and blue, and we'll do blue another time.
Yeah,
kind of the main game plan is to on 7 get either a Wormcoil Engine or Karn Liberated, which is the 7 drop super planeswalker that just wins the game by being in play.
Yep.
And eventually, once you kind of that plan, have to deal with that, going into trying to get an Eldrazi, Emrakul specifically, or one of the other ones, where using the card Eye of Ugin, which is a land that lets you tutor for any colorless card,
yep.
Get an Eldrazi, and with the Urza lands plus the other mana, playing Emrakul, hard casting Emrakul, and just winning because you have a 15-15.
And they're actually casting. You're not cheating, which means you get an extra turn.
Like it's basically a hasted 15-15 protection from colored spells and annihilator 6 player.
So on that note, do you know, has there ever been like a story or conversation about the creation of Emrakul as a card? Like where they've talked about...
No, not that I know. I mean, there probably is, but I just don't know.
That would be interesting.
Yeah.
Right, where they're just being, okay, how ridiculous can we make it?
We'll
cost
15. We'll get into that Eldrazi review.
Yeah, well, it costs 15, so can we just... So it should be a time walk also.
Right.
And it should be protection from everything. It should just...
I think they made all of the really cool things, and they're like, oh, they can't reanimate this. I think they tried reanimating, like, oh, this is too good. And so they added the shuffle effect.
Right.
But then, like...
It's an awesome card.
It's an awesome card.
They are, and Eldrazi, you're back next, right? Isn't that the next block?
We don't know. I mean, I'm calling it right now. I think Zendikar is next. I think we're going to Zendikar fall 2000.
I thought it was already announced 15. That we were going back and the Eldrazi were coming back. Or maybe it was just rumored.
You might have heard me say that. Because I'm like, it's happening... If it doesn't happen fall of 2015, I'm, like, convinced it's fall of...
No. I'm sorry. It's not that it's rumored. It's that we have Ugin's Nexus, and they're referencing Ugin again. That's what it is.
Oh, yeah. So we're going to Ugin next. So there's so much setup right now for the Eldrazi set. This is such a tangent, but I guess we're on the Eldrazi deck of the format. So, you know, over the summer and for the Commander product, Obnixilis has been mentioned multiple times. We now see the Lithomancer, which is the white planeswalker from the Commander set. We're seeing Ugin for the first time, which is coming up in the next set. It's like basically we're going through a prequel to Zendikar. The last set had multiple references to Zendikar.
Right.
Fetchlands have just recently come back. Like, the fact that there could be a moment, like, I don't think they're going to reprint the Zendikar fetches in Zendikar. I think they have these planted ahead of time. They're going to be good with the landfall creatures that come back in Zendikar this fall.
Yeah.
It's just going to be like, it's all kind of leading towards what feels like we're going back to Zendikar and seeing the Eldrazi.
And the real reason that we would go back to Zendikar is that, like, now...
Well, it's a huge cliffhanger.
And also just the idea of, like, the War of the Worlds giant monsters and all that.
Right.
Super popular. Players
love
the Eldrazi.
Mention, like, the Eldrazi are coming back also in MM, in the next Modern Masters set. They've announced Emrakul is, like, the face of the
He's
set.
He's the face of the set, right.
And so, like, if the Eldrazi are coming back there, it's, like, a great time. Here's a reminder of what was going on in Zendikar last time. We've now done all of the... We now have done literally all of the prequel work to set up just, like, we're returning. And it's just going to be epic.
So, basically, continue on with the deck tech.
Yeah.
Those are basically the lands. It
plays Grove of the Burnwells. It's the one deck that plays Grove. Oh, it's one of the few decks that plays Grove. And Grove is a red-green land. It's the best red-green land probably ever printed that's not a dual land. And it lets you tap for any color, comes into play untapped, but it gains your opponent life.
And it's not a land that exists in a cycle. It was part of the future site cycle of dual colored lands.
They're all printed, like, weird and wonky and different for each of them.
The only one of those that I ever was reprinted as a cycle was Graven Cairns, that became the Shadowmoor Eventide filter lands. But this one was never reprinted. It used to combo.
Of those lands, there are probably two of them are too powerful to ever see print. In a cycle.
Horizon Canopy.
Horizon Canopy and this one.
Yeah.
This one combos with
Punishing Fire.
Punishing Fire, so it just ended up being actually too powerful.
Yeah, well, they banned Punishing Fire for that reason.
Right. So kind of the mana base is, it's red-green, it has Ghost Quarter, the Urza Tower, and Ivugan. Ghost Quarter is actually the most important purpose is to kill your own lands in response to Sowing Salt. It has some value otherwise, but its real purpose is to stop people from destroying your lands because your game plan is to protect those.
Right. You need to make sure that that you don't get...
Like, so one of the best hate cards against this deck is Sowing Salt, and what it basically does is exile a land in play and all other lands in your deck of that same land type.
So they can just, extirpate, if you will, one of your Urza's lands, which kind of screws the deck.
Right. So, like, as we said, it's about getting Emrakul and Karn early. Karn being the planeswalker that exiles cards from player hands and can restart the game. Eventually getting Emrakul. It does this using a combination of multiple land searching effects. Its main two are Expedition Map and Sylvan Scrying.
Yep. Both, and it, again, yeah, I talk about this all the time. This is utilizes two of the effects that get any land.
Yeah.
Also, it plays a combination of Chromatic Stars and Chromatic Spheres.
Right, which are kind of its cantrip that also allows it to kind of draw into the green and red mana it needs to cast some of its other spells.
There are artifacts that cost one colorless that tap to sacrifice for a tap in one colorless to create one mana of any color and draw a card.
Right.
The trigger as far as the card draw are slightly different, but they're basically the exact same card otherwise.
And then board wipes. Relic of Progenitus, which we mentioned.
Relic of Progenitus, which is a fantastic and versatile graveyard hate card that also cantrips.
Right. It's good against Tarmogoyf. It's good against now the Delve cards. I mean, it's one of the premier, like, artifact graveyard hate removal spell.
I would contend it's the premier graveyard removal spell because it can be played in every deck.
Right.
Yeah.
And on top of that, it's a cantrip, and that's what really it's important. This deck is trying to cycle through its deck as quick to be able to find the important lands it needs. So having three cantrips that also fix mana or have other utility effects that are artifacts is very helpful.
Absolutely.
And lastly, it's board wipes. So it plays both Pyroclasm and Oblivion Stone.
Yes.
Both of which allow you to wipe the board of creatures. Oblivion Stone lets you get rid of more difficult permanents and lets you kind of keep planeswalkers and enchantments and artifacts that you might have problems with out of the field. And Pyroclasm is just super efficient. Kills all the small threats that this deck has problems with because aggro is a huge problem for this deck.
I've also seen this deck play All is Dust before. I'm not sure if this version, both versions toy with it sometimes. That's an interesting Eldrazi card. It's 7 mana, colorless, destroy all colored permanents.
Right, and you can, the nice thing about that is it's searchable by Ivugan. I think Oblivion Stone has kind of just outright replaced it because it's one mana more to do it all at once, but it just has a very similar effect.
Absolutely.
Also,
we should talk about, you mentioned Karn Liberated, but this deck does play Wyrmcoil Engine, which is the other best turn 3 threat in the deck. Then it plays the Eldrazi.
Right. I mean, basically, on turn 3, it wants to either play Emrakul. Sorry. On turn 3, it either wants to play Karn, Wyrmcoil Engine, or Oathstone.
Yeah.
And either wipe the board, making it so they don't kill you, play the probably most powerful Planeswalker that gets played in Modern, or play one of the most powerful threats in the format that is most difficult to kill.
100%. So, getting to the Gauntlet.
First Blue-White Delver. This is a tough matchup.
They're counterspells.
Well, the problem is that it's more counterspell decks are generally bad against you because most counterspell decks are like, let's wait as long as possible to kill you.
Right.
The problem with Delver is, A, its threats are pretty resistant to your, like, most of your removal.
Yeah.
And, or, like, just, they can kill you quickly. Its speed is what you have the hardest problem with.
So, basically, if you're on the play and you land turn one Delver and it flips and you're holding open, like, a Mana Leak backup, you can probably get them low enough that you will be able to kill them with, like, Snap Bolt later in the game before they can stabilize. So the clock with Delver is really difficult for you to fight against if they have even just one counterspell to slow your plan down.
Right. And Karn's really bad in this matchup because when it comes down to it, you're playing cards that are just way less like they you don't care about your individual permanents with Delver.
Essentially, if you because this deck doesn't natural turn three Tron that often. It's capable because of Sylvan Scrying, but
no, it's Expedition Map is the way you get.
But it's still not that consistent. It's not going to get it every time. So something I noticed testing against this deck in the past was if you can essentially get them to a point on the play where you have them almost dead by turn three or four. Like if your clock is turn four on the play, you might win against this deck if they can't stabilize. If you can basically withstand Pyroclasm.
Right.
I think next week we're going to be talking about Hunted Handsome, but I have a story of playing basically a 7/7 trample on turn two on the play against the deck that hit Natural Tron, and they were still dead by the time they could get Karn in play.
Right. So, and, you know, Blue Red Delver probably even has like a good hate chart at the side. Like there are many problems that kind of Tron has against Delver. This is one of the reasons that that Tron isn't good right now.
Because Delver
is good.
Yeah.
So next, Birthing Pod. This is actually a matchup that is way better than people think it is. So people think that the problem with is the infinite combos.
Right.
Like gaining infinite life seems like it's good against Tron. But the issue is that once Emrakul comes into play, you can start mitigating what their permanents are.
Right.
And Karn wins you the game. So you win in two ways. You either deck them out because you have Eldrazi that you can discard and you can recycle your graveyard so that you just continually can't lose and they draw too many cards. But the real way you win is by restarting the game with Karn. And with a card you discard yourself, Eldrazi or something in play starting out the game.
Gotcha.
There's no way they can beat you at that point. So, like, you really can just restart the game. They don't have infinite life anymore, and you go off.
That's fair, yeah. I still think that Birthing Pod, if they can disrupt you, is probably going to be just fine. That's another one of these situations that if they come out aggressive enough and they have one way to disrupt you with an aggressive threat, you might just lose to that. That sort of seems to be the problem with this deck. With Tron, is that if somebody can get their creature plan against you going and disrupt your sort of your wrath or et cetera, they will probably beat you. But if you come out on the right, you come out swinging, you're on the play, you natural a turn three Tron, you might just be able to win the game.
See, I actually honestly believe Miralapod's one of your best matchups. I think this is one of the reasons you play the deck, because on top of the fact that you can get past their main combos, which is kind of what their game plan is against you. Four Pyroclasm, four O-Stone, and four Relic of Progenitus go so far to help you stop pod decks from kind of doing what they're trying to do. I think the Angel decks are slightly stronger, but I think O-Stone just handles them.
I would agree. Our next matchup is Junk or Jund, one of these black-green X decks. They play a ton of pinpointed removal.
Well, see what I honestly this is the reason to play the deck. The reason Tron is the most popular when Jund and Junk decks are the most popular.
I was gonna say their pinpointed removal doesn't do much against you.
Right, Path to Exile is technically decent against Wurmcoil Engine, but like your real threat here is Karn.
Yeah.
They can't beat it. And when it comes down to it, only Path out of Junk is good against you, and Jund has a huge problem. None of their cards do anything against you. It's really the reason, when you are in a format where Birthing Pod and Jund decks are the best cards in the format, that's when you're best off. Because even Thoughtseize isn't that good against you. Most of your cards are just like jerky cantrips or tutorable by lands.
Yeah, I would completely agree with you. The next matchup is Burn. Burn's really good against you.
Yeah, well, as we mentioned, like anything that can kill you hyper efficiently and quickly is a problem.
Well, especially since. You resolving Wurmcoil Engine on turn three. I mean, if you're on the play and you get Wurmcoil down against Burn, you'll probably win.
That's your best game plan. I think, like, Pyroclasm on turn two, which is impossible with a turn three. I guess your game plan is Wurmcoil on turn three or four and possibly wiping the board ahead of time to kind of mitigate your life total before that.
But even then, even if you get your turn three Wurmcoil and they're on the play, there's still a chance that they're going to have a trick or something to kill you.
Or burn in their hand.
Yeah. So it's
hard. It's rough. I mean, the nice thing is you completely go around. Or no, you don't completely, but you definitely are better against Eidolon of Revels than most decks are because you have more expensive spells.
Yeah.
But it's definitely a hard matchup.
Yeah, but I mean, also still, you still play 16 or 20 spells that cost. Yeah, I mean, also after board, they have decent cards against you.
Right, like they're one of the decks that could have Sowing Salt, which is a huge blowout.
Yeah, exactly.
Next is Ascendancy. I mean, like now we're getting to the decks. Like Ascendancy is just a terrible matchup.
It's gonna beat you.
Yeah, it's just gonna beat you.
You can't beat Ascendancy.
Yeah, the interactions you have on their level is just doesn't do anything against them.
I guess the versions of Ascendancy that like had to win with like
birds. You had some game because you have Pyroclasm, but now it doesn't. That's not even the deck.
The Fate Stitcher version. You're just well, actually, no. The Fate Stitcher version. You have Relic. So. Right.
Oh, I think. But the thing is that they can just play. They just play Fate Stitcher as a 4-drop. They play Ascendancy in this Fate Stitcher, and you're just like,
Yeah, it seems like your matchup's really bad. Scapeshift.
This is the other. These are the two ramp decks. This is like the ramp decks going head to head. I think Scapeshift's problem is that Karn can exile permanents in play.
Yeah.
I think that Scapeshift also has a problem with Wyrmcoil Engine.
Yeah.
But I think it's close. I think that this is probably... I think you're just a little bit faster than them.
We always talk about a lot of these matchups in Modern, the ones that aren't just vastly skewed, like Ascendancy, come down to the play and the draw. So on the play, I think Scapeshift is better. On the draw, it's probably worse.
Yeah,
so
I agree.
It's pretty much that simple. How fast can they resolve Wyrmcoil against you?
So that's Trun. Is there anything else interesting about the deck that we want to talk about before we move on to...
I don't think so. I mean, Tron, that pretty much covers what it does.
I guess one thing, it's not on our list, but counterspell decks.
Yeah.
Decks with counterspells. Tron is very good against those decks because the inevitability is kind of like Birthing Pod.
Right.
Except it's uncounterable.
Yes, that is true.
Like, the fact that getting Emrakul in play is going to happen if you wait too long, no matter what.
Yeah.
Because basically the combo is Iavugan into Emrakul, and all of their cards are lands or an uncounterable 15-15 ridiculous.
When you say counterspell decks, you mean devoted control counterspell decks.
Control anything that is trying to control the game for the long game.
Yeah, exactly. For the long game. Because we talked about Delver and why is if you can land an early threat with counter backup for the first 5 turns of the game, that's how you beat it.
Right.
It's not the long game counterspell. This is a situation where Mana Leak and Remand are very good.
The reason I think it's bad is because the counterspell deck of the format right now is Delver.
Yeah.
And Delver's plan is to kill early with counterspells helping you along the way versus control decks that are supposed to stop you early and win in the late game with like Celestial Colonnade.
Exactly. So that pretty much covers Tron.
Yeah.
We
are taking a break for 2 weeks. It is the holidays, and neither of us are going to be in town. So it is not going to work out, but we will have podcasts for you right now, first week of January. We are super excited about Fate Reforged spoilers. I thought really maybe excited. If we wanted to, we could make some call-outs and predictions of what's going to be in there and see how wrong we're going to be.
Oh.
Yeah. I think Ugin's not going to be colorless. I think the spoiler that's been online is like fake because it hasn't been confirmed. And I think he's going to be blue, white, red. I'm calling Jeskai.
Jeskai, eh?
Yeah. I think that's the opposite Nicol Bolas. I think Nicol Bolas is Grixis. And then the switching out the black for white is exactly what Ugin is. And then they're polar opposites. And it's going to be all about this is the Ugin.
You love the story stuff. I think that hybrid's going to be a big theme. I think we're going to see a super, super, super strong focus on hybrid cards.
Right. Well, we already got spoiled the champion.
Yeah.
Or the con of the teamer thing, and it has hybrid in it. So hybrid's in the
set.
Like
that dragon champion thing. Yeah. It looks so awesome.
So we're definitely, there are hints of that, and I can imagine that kind of working well with the gold set, and then that will work okay with a non-gold set that we get in Dragons of Tarkir. I can see that being a thing.
Hybrid mana is so awesome.
So we predicted it. We'll find out in 2 weeks if that's happening. Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. Happy Kwanzaa. We want to remind you to always follow us on Twitter.
Yeah.
My Twitter account is @KessWiley.
My Twitter and Instagram, I use Instagram more often, is Ben Bateman Media.
And, you know, the podcast Twitter, which is the one that we want you to interact with the most, is @TheMMCast. Please tweet your questions, your favorites, the way you think we're just completely wrong about how we broke down Tron. Any cards that we missed from 8th and 9th edition,
talk about Yawgmoth Demon.
Yeah, Yawgmoth Demon is just a terrible card. Please tweet us. The question of the week is, what is your favorite favorite 8th and 9th edition cards? Next podcast, we'll be talking about the top 10 artifacts in the Modern format. We brought back Jimmy Wong to bring in the new year. That will be followed probably by us doing all the speculation in Fate Reforged, Standard, Modern ban list, blah, 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 blah.
There's also an awesome deck tech on the episode with Jimmy Wong about that deck we always talk about.
Awesome is in big quotes.
Hunted Handsome, the deck that we always reference.
It's coming. You're going to find out about it.
So tune in, and we'll catch you guys in the new year.
Yep.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to themmcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter @KessWiley and @SecludedGlenn. See you later, alligator.